Firstly, thanks for coming to the seminar. I think it's really, really important that there is a public interest in what's actually being discussed. I think the forum that we've had, the seminar so far, the calibre of speakers has been brilliant, and it certainly caused me to think. And that's actually the purpose of this paper for me, is to actually express my thinking in regard to what's actually transpiring. Now, Peter Ridd is being persecuted and demonised, if you like, by powers that be. And I might highlight the question I asked was in regard to the what were the Conservative government doing about it? And if anything, in my view, they're aiding and abetting the situation. They're not actually achieving any change in direction whatsoever. And it really is important to understand that, because the what we're actually looking at in regard to media, in regard to political situation, in regard to, is a concerted attack to deconstruct us as a people. It's a concerted attack. It affects every single one of you and your children and your children's children. And it'll affect what we do in the next, honestly, in the very short period in front of us. What we choose to do can turn this thing around, but the thing is that we've got to first of all have a vision that is realistic and also attempt to implement it. Now, correlation is not causation. I heard that the other day. Jennifer Mahorossi, I watched her video, very informative. Again, the same caliber of charts and correlation of solar, earth rotations, moon rotations. It was a wonderful paper. Correlation, not an end in itself, but certainly enough to prick your ears up as to what's actually transpiring. And the argument that's there is that, is science valid or is it not valid because there are ulterior motives? And that's really what my paper is about. It's about the ulterior motives. Correlation is causation. I highlight the Conservatives because to me they are the area where we perhaps may be pinning our hope. And I put it to you that I think that hope is a false hope. I don't think there's any hope in that area because of what they continuously do. Now, Alan Moran, he recently had a paper, it was March, I think, and he highlighted the different environmental studies that have been done, and there was about, say, half a dozen. And it was all within the way I read it, within the terms of reference directed from a Conservative government. And every outcome was for more power to the federal government, more policy impositions against the individual. It was actually changing where the individual might be free and where you've got the totalitarian government over here, and it was moving the bar closer and closer towards totalitarianism. And I need to define that for you so that you understand. If you're talking about totalitarianism, it's got many titles. One might be communism, you understand it. One might be socialism. So is Nazism, it's over there. But so is corporate monopoly capitalism. It's the oligarchs in charge who've got the vast resources of the world who are dominating policy over us. They're imposing it over us. And you might say, well, hang on a sec, I'm all for free enterprise. Well, so am I. We've got common ground on that. I'm for free enterprise, but I'm not for monopoly capitalism. There's a bit of history that I'd need to just put on the table, just a little, all right? Because we've got some of the very good books in front of us that will actually give you a feel of why I'm saying that. Professor Anthony Sutton from the Business College in America, Stanford, he produced a 3-volume work that started, he correlated data from 1917, I think it was, through to 1965. Correlated data of military, strategic, industrial support to the Soviet Union. He correlated it. And he put it in a shorter version, military aid to the Soviet Union. The thing is, this is the land of the free. This is the home of the brave. And of course, the execution of those wars was in that time, and yet all of this military hardware and support went through to it. And you've got to sort of come to grips with what's actually going on philosophically here, because it's not the narrative that you would take into account. Your narrative would be that communism is evil and capitalism is good, this narrative. But I put it to you that monopoly capitalism is over here. And in that monopoly capitalism, they're actually building up, supposedly the enemy in order to constantly feed this machine, economics, which of course Oliver was talking about, constantly feeding the machine. Otherwise, they can't balance the books. America's very fortunate because it's got essentially a stable currency. It's used for international exchange. They can more or less just run as much money off of the printing press as they like. And it's kept their economy going. But if you take into account what's actually transpiring with the Chinese at the moment, you'll see that there's leaps and bounds ahead. Leaps and bounds, not ahead of America, but they're leaps and bounds ahead of where they were. And they're directionally moving towards an enormous superpower. And the thing is, you've got to sort of, hang on a sec, this is a totalitarian country. How can it actually do that when it's really got a slave empire? And I put it to you that the same oligarchs in communist China, the same oligarchs are no different than the same oligarchs that built communist Russia up, that built communist China up. They're the same people. In that, when you get up to that level, that absolute dominance hierarchy, you get to that level, that's where they are. And of course, that's where international finance is. And so, okay, we talk about the media. What are your thoughts on it? How do you actually place yourself in perspective in these things? And it's interesting because I touch on a few people who are currently being persecuted. One is Israel Folau, for having taken an ethical position through social media, lost his income, not only that, but the existing conservative government is putting heat on Tonga so that he can't be even employed by someone else. They're putting heat on him. So they're in it. Don't think they're not. They're in it. They know exactly what they're doing. And they play this false hand of being on your side. They're not. They're not. Not at all. And so you look at that and you're thinking, okay, if you look at just recently, I found it interesting, Kerry-Ann Keneally.
Christine,
yeah. Andrew Bolt, Alan Jones, and Boris Johnson all did the same thing simultaneously. What was it? They condemned the climate protesters and they really got stuck into them. They went through the media and they just drive over them as speed humps or leave them there to be soiled or totally really got stuck into the kids as in, you know, they're the most well-treated, opulent, comfortable, never done a hard day's work. They really turned them on it. And what I'm suggesting is that this is actually a method. It's a method of dialectics of where you actually separate and bring the two to argue. This is how, this is the actual philosophy, the outworking of dialectical materialism. It's the philosophy that you've got to consider. It's the tools, it's the part of the key to unlock the door of this information. It's not hard to decipher. It is hard to decipher what is actually going on, and you've got to go after the key. And these books that are here, most of them this side, are the last 12, 18 months worth of reading in that and studying it, because each one of these really particularly clever people is continuing to build a case in my mind about how do I decipher, how do I interpret what goes on. Now, for instance, the Donald Trump situation in Syria. It's current. He's pulling his troops out of Syria. What were his troops doing there? He's pulling his troops out of Syria. Turkey marches straight in. All right, what is the media telling you? Well, that Donald Trump has done this and you can't scratch your heads. You're wondering what it's about. Well, I put it to you that Turkey is starting drilling this coming week just off the coast of Lebanon, Syria. They're starting drilling. They need the troops there to protect the rape and pillage of the assets of Syria. The media is not telling you that. They tell you nothing. And this is something that you really have to come to grips with. When you press the box on, don't think that you're getting the truth in this situation. You're not. You're getting a very filtered and very specific message. And they study people's responses, constantly studying people's responses. I give it to you. You consider, say, the reward points that we've got. Reward points for purchasing here and there and all that sort of stuff. that's part of the advertising marketing, so that they can test the rigor of the advertising to see the responses and all that sort of stuff, so they can build up a demographic profile of the particular people in that area and the age group and what their, how that ad worked and how this worked and that. The social media is doing the same thing. It's actually presenting bulletins out to you, and then it's testing to see the effectiveness of these. Chinese social credit, or if you like, technocracy or totalitarian communism, is happening to us right now. It's not in a distant land. It's right now. They're monitoring everything that you do, and you may not be aware of it. You know that your phone, all your apps on there, all this bit of this, it all adds up to building a profile on what you're interested in. Your Google searches. I can go back to Google and have a look at it, and that was like 15 years ago, and I can have a look at whatever sites I went to. It's all there on the database. Who is this person? I can build up a profile on him. So that technocracy that's happening in China is already here, and it's monitoring us on a daily basis. Now, the thing is that in the end, you've got to ask the what is the purpose of all of this? What is the purpose of it? Why are they monitoring so hard? Are we such a difficult people? Are we so fiery? And the actual fact is we're not so fiery. It's not us. We're actually quite a placid people, a calm and take a long suffering type of people. But the purpose behind this is to actually bring us in and under domination of a world structure. That's what it's about. It's about world government. Now, our Prime Minister talked about it the other day when he was referring to something, and he said we can manage it locally. And the fact is that the elector is the important person here. And I think, well, I'm listening to you, but I don't take it as what you're saying is bona fide. I don't. Because I'm listening to you, and what you're saying, and this is why this little booklet is really, really so important, that booklet there, and it's On Planning the Earth by Jeffrey Dobbs. And the thing is that in the booklet that Jeffrey's talking about, what he's doing is he's showing that they will administer a centralist policy. This is the dominance hierarchy. They'll administer a centralist policy locally. They'll administer it. We're good. We can control the majority every time. We can control because we've got the media behind us. We've got all forms of monitoring and surveillance behind us. And so don't you worry about us. We'll manage the centralist policy locally. And it's you've really got to come to grips with this, that we're actually having the screws pressed down on us. Now, the Murray-Darling Basin Plan, one of the talks that I went to, that was a particular topic of keen interest. Murray-Darling, I went to the Riverina, I had a look around at the Murrumbidgee and the irrigation areas there, and I've been through Victoria irrigation country quite a bit. And so I get an idea of the vastness of the food bowl that we have and how important it is. But the thing is, you come back to the recent legislation by, if you like, a conservative, Malcolm Turnbull. He was in the Conservative government. He came up with it. And I've got a video on the computer. And the video makes reference to something that I haven't substantiated other than secondhand. But the professor on the video said that the Constitution was in the way of what it was wrong, and it was in the way of what he proposed with that Murray-Darling Basin Plan. And I think that that's a really, really important observation. Because what it's doing is it's making the situation bigger. It's making that it's more centrally controlled, and that the little people, the affected farmers, the graziers, anyone who's using water, all that sort of stuff, it's actually affecting them personally, while it's actually bringing that control of that huge resource into the hands of corporations. And it really, really is important to recognise that. Now, in Jeffrey Dobbs' booklet, he talks about the Tennessee Valley Authority. And the Tennessee Valley was so many dams, whatever, and several major rivers, and then dam them up and use it for, the argument was, environmental reasons. It was all environment. This is in the 1930s, I think. And And the thing is that their environmental justification was that the farmers weren't doing this, there's salinity, there was soil erosion, there were this, that and the other. And so anyone who reads much about dams knows full well that what happens is, of course, is the dams fill up and there's this all this lay down of sludge at the bottom of the dam, and they have to actually keep it cleaned, if you like, in order to have the silt, yeah, in order to have effective storage capacity. Now, the thing with the Tennessee Valley Authority was that it was about power generation and stable power generation, bringing things together under a central authority. But the outworking of that was that that same model was taken out to other countries. And Britain was big on implementing that same type of thing. Australia was big on implementing that same type of, if you like, central controlling asset. And it really, really is important, because our people are suffering because of it. And you would ask the question, how could they get it? How could the Liberals get it so wrong so many times? How could they get it wrong so many times? How could they, the Garneau, whatever, the different reports that came out in regard to climate change, and the outcome was always hand the power to a higher authority, hand the power. Now, you've got to come back to, if you like, and I'm going to come back, take a step back from this, and talk to you a little bit about philosophy. And that is, in the sense, when you move to a dominance hierarchy, what you're doing is you're saying that a level above you has authority over you. Now, there are times when you need it, military or industrial. In industry, you want to produce a car, CEO has got to have everyone subordinate to him, so I understand it. But in a community, it doesn't work that way. In a community, we will discuss things. We will rebut each other. We will have stern dialogue of fixed opinions. But we don't have to dominate each other, in a sense. And the thing is that out of this pursuit of truth, you're trying to get true enough for you. It's interesting, because I use some of Peterson's words. I am impressed by him in a lot of ways, in some ways not. But true enough, it's actually a truth comes to you and says, yes, well, we can do this, and it's true enough for us. And so I think that's really, really, really important in order to understand that you choosing to do these true enoughs for you shouldn't necessarily be the true enough for someone else. You should actually be being in charge of yourself. And I've read it somewhere where it says a totalitarianism in your own person. You can totalitarianize yourself, and that's a good relationship, and that's the only time you should. Otherwise, it should be mutual love and cooperation. Now, we live in a society where we do come together. We come together for water. We do come together for that, because we do need dams and we do need irrigation. The Riverina, Griffith, going and looking through there, you need to drought-proof Australia. There's no question about it. We do need these things. But the thing is that if all our water resources are going towards something that's being exported, it's just, hang on a sec, and then the local farmers can't even have enough water to produce the milk to keep up to the supermarket, so they'll fly it in from New Zealand or somewhere. That's not environmental stewardship. That's a form of madness. Oh yes, but it's a dollar here, it's 80 cents there, it's 70 cents there. And it's economic sabotage, if you like, to our own culture, our own community, our own economy. It's economic sabotage. Now, coming back to the purpose, if you like, or policy, I'll take you back to, say, one document, like the Lima Declaration. It's an important document. The Lima Declaration was where the government in power and successive governments agreed to hand over our industry to third world countries. But some of those third world countries are now nuclear powers that outperform, and they're alongside the United States as far as production goes. You really have to think about what that means is that this has taken our automotive, our shipbuilding, steel, white goods, it's taken all of those things and handed them to someone else. In the sense is we are strategically in quite a vulnerable position. And I put it to you that that is the policy. That is the purpose behind all of this. What is going on in Venezuela at the moment is the direction that we as a people, as a country are heading towards. It really, really is important that you start coming to grips with that. The fact that our water is now so hard to get by and so expensive to purchase. The fact that our electricity is unstable. We've got coal reserves coming out our ears. And what are our politicians doing? I'll tell you what they're doing. They dynamited one of our power stations several hundred kilometres from here, and they put it across all the media to show you this is what they think about it. Now, this is our security. And so it really is, it's an entirely false narrative. It's an entirely false narrative that the environment is everything and the you as a people are nothing. Let's just come back to who we are. Who really are we? We came from the earth. We are part of the biosphere. We are part of this earth. We have a right to sustenance from the earth as much as any other living organism. We have that right. And it's not, we're not in this as a carbuncle or whatever, as something to be expunged from the earth. We're not. We're part of it. We're integral to it. The air we breathe, our engagement with the plants that we grow, it really, really is important to place yourself in this type of philosophical, if you like, relationship, that we are part of what's going on. Now, I've taken you through in a bit of helter-skelter a little bit to really just paint a light brush paint picture of the situation as I see it. One is, in summary, the Conservative governments are not helping you. I don't believe they are. You may have the exceptional individual, the Hastings, all right? You may, and get behind him if he is that exceptional individual. But in the end, it's all about handing power away from us into a central authority. Socialism, corporatized capitalism, Trans-Pacific Partnership, it's the same thing. It means that you can't speak out. If you look at what's going on with Qantas, you can't step out of line. If you look what's going on in the rugby union or in universities, you can't have an opinion. You're actually thumb screws on, and they will threaten your job security and obviously your family, your home, all that sort of stuff. It really, really is a very, very vital consideration to take at the forefront. And it's also important to say, well, to understand that the purpose or the policy behind this is world government. It's communism. That's what it is. It's communism. Okay? So then it comes back to, says, well, all right, you've made this declaration. It's communism. What can I do about it? What can you do about it? And the thing is that the media itself at the moment, and you can give your social media a thing, you can consider the print media, you can consider the TV and radio media, but let's also bring into account your learning institutions, because they are part of it. They're part of the development of your thinking. That's the media, and that's ingrained from 4 years old, 3 years old. It's ingrained, and especially the likes of something like the outworking of Ros Ward and what went on with that gender business and teaching young kids. That was sponsored by Conservative governments. Don't think it wasn't. It was. They were in there doing it. They're deconstructing us. Okay, so you've got to come back. All right, you see this. Now what? Now what? Okay. And that, to me, is where we're at. Because I think that, first of all, you can't do too much unless you arm yourself. And the arm yourself, like any sort of arming yourself, is to empower yourself with knowledge and to actually exercise that knowledge and skills on a regular basis. Exercise it. You can't do it as a one-off, I'm going to try this. Okay, I'll put it to you now that if you want to become proficient in something, it could take 10,000 hours. 10,000 hours of effort to become proficient in it. Imparting knowledge back into the community of what is, what should be, what can be. Now, Oliver gave you a beautiful illustration of what can be. Science is attempting to give you knowledge, but it's being subverted. So that actual bona fide knowledge is your empowerment. So, but you can't get it by he's right, she's wrong. That first of all, that's pushing all of the responsibility away from yourself. It, to me, this whole thing is about, you can either take them on with a standing army cross, we can't do that, okay? Or you can take it on as individuals who are as busy and as dynamic, I'm a beekeeper, as an angry bee, all right? As an angry bee. Now, if each one of you chose to be that angry bee and started terrorizing the bureaucracy, started terrorizing the politicians, started terrorizing the media in every form that you can, then to me that's quite a formidable opportunity for you to do something. It is, if you have the heart. If you have the heart. But you can't have the heart if you don't prepare yourself as a soldier, if you like, if you don't put the intellectual rigor into it. And as I said, those books there, constantly at it, constantly trying to feed my mind, constantly trying to place things in perspective. Now, there's a book there by Ian McGilchrist. It's very, very important. When you receive a thought or something, an image or something in your mind, and if you just juggle it around in your mind, you might accept it as being, well, that might be true enough, it might work, whatever. But the key to, in my view, rational thinking is that you're able to demonstrate it or place it into context. You're able to place it into context. And when you place it into context, you substantiate your thought. And then you're actually using what I'd call the scientific method. The scientific method. You're actually substantiating, you're finding a truth in that. And that truth then is to me a very important point. You can move on from there. Now, go with, I think it's interesting, Keith Windschuttle wrote a wonderful book there about killing history. And it's, to me, it's very important that they use the scientific method to substantiate history. They use it to substantiate science. They use it to substantiate psychology, if you like, if they're doing it correctly. But I put it to you that you should be using the scientific method to substantiate policy. To substantiate policy. You should actually be putting it in context. How did that turn out when the rubber hit the road? How did it turn out? Was it as you expected? Was the Murray-Darling Basin as expected? I put it to you, it was exactly as expected from the bloke who designed it. Absolutely. But for the normal people, no, it wasn't, because it didn't actually achieve any purpose other than to make things worse, other than to take more power over the individual, impose more taxes, more costs, more charges. And so it's a continuation of this same policy, handing manufacturing, handing security, handing our industry, all the things that we've built up over 200 plus years as a nation. And I think that it's absolutely incredible that we get the likes of, I'll throw it in again, names are important to me because they give me the thought. Alan Frost, a professor of history, talked about First Fleet and Botany Bay. And our culture is one of something to be pleased with and to be proud of. What actually transpired here in Australia. The people in Britain, I know some of them were big money, finances and all that, but the fact is they wanted Australia to succeed. And so they put every effort in to the vessels, to the convicts, they were prepared, fed, all that sort of stuff, and to the equipment, the charts, the ports they were dropping into, all those sorts of things, in order for the planning ahead, the botanists, the seeds, all those sorts of things. There was a huge logistical effort. Our culture is worth saving. Our culture is something to be proud of. We have come from a vivid, dynamic, creative, innovative, and it was anchored on the Christian faith. It was anchored in it. In some parts, it's actually immersed within it. Now, I'll put it to you that we talked about the world and our place in it, and it is right. This is our place. And if you like, the life forces are in every single cell in your body. The life forces, the desire to breathe, to continue to live, are within every part. And so when you've got this suppression, oppression coming down on you, it's stifling, it's restricting your thinking, it's restricting your communication, it's restricting your ability to debate and converse, it's that's what its purpose is about. It's restricting you financially so you can't afford the water. It's restricting you so you can't keep steel industries in Australia because the power isn't reliable. These are deliberate outworking of policy, right? And I'm not suggesting for a second that the Labor government would be any better. Not for a second. What I'm saying is that the roots of corruption in this are so deep, and they permeate our universities, our education, because the teachers flow from the universities. They permeate our seminaries. Why are they all so socialistically inclined, taking from someone else? That's envy. That's not the correct relationship. And especially when you consider that the financial system, if it's placed in equilibrium, the financial system delivers what we're capable of. It delivers what we're capable of. We can put a hand up and say, we need steel manufacturing because we've got to build bridges. Fine, let's do it. And put a power station right next to it and put a coal mine right next to it. Oh, hang on. That was up near Port Augusta. They had one of those and they dynamited it. Do you see what I mean? It's a deliberate policy. So you've always got to come back to a political will. We need cars. Well, okay, maybe we do. Maybe we needed this huge road infrastructure down the hill that cost like $1,000 million, whatever. But the thing is, you've got to put that in perspective. You've got to put it in perspective that the resources, the assets, the raw materials were sourced here. And yet the debt is to some obscure International Monetary Fund or World Bank overseas. This is, we're indebted to them for things that we have built ourselves. You've really got to place your thinking in this. And the purpose behind it, what is the purpose behind the financial system? It's to bring us back to this dominance hierarchy. All right, so to me it's important.
So I noticed that you had a lot of criticisms on what the system's like, and you believe that we should engage in conversation about changing the system. What would you like to see implemented in policy change in order to change the system as is?
Okay, same question I had in Victoria, and that was over the Murray-Darling. What you've got to do if you're considering change is to concentrate on the desired objectives. What is the purpose behind what you actually want to change? Now, for instance, the Murray-Darling Basin Plan, what would your purpose be? What is the policy, the end outcome that you want from it? And it would be something like you want a reliable, you want a sustainable and an affordable water supply. That's what you want. That is the policy. If you turn around and you say, Burdekin, we're going to dam that river and we're going to send it inland, or we're going to do something else, what you're doing is you're actually mucking around with what experts, civil engineers and scientists have to nut out. All right? So you concentrate on policy. All right? Now, so the Murray-Darling, reliable, sustainable, affordable water supply. All right? And that to me is it's as straightforward as that. Don't get confused about trying to design something that they'll pull the rug out from under your feet in a second.
I have another question. Yeah. So you would agree that the Liberals and Labor are the majority of the electorate, well, the majority of the representation of the electorate. Would you not agree then that possibly we have to change the way our voting system works so as to encourage more engagement with our political system?
Okay. All right. Well, the first thing I'd consider is that your summary, in a sense, that the Liberal and Labor are working in cahoots, that's my position. All right? I think I've made that clear. They're working in cahoots for a single policy. All right? So it comes back to, okay, how effective is my vote? Well, I put it to you that that when I talk about individuals and I talk about the opportunity to outwork what you can do, as that busy bee, is that your vote doesn't even start on election day. It, in a sense, it's the outworking of the other 365 days that you've already done. And then on the basis that, okay, you tick a box or put the numbers in a box and you've got a result, doesn't necessarily mean it's the result you wanted. But the thing is that you're vote needs to be where, firstly, I'll put my hand up. I didn't vote for you, but I want to talk to you about this, all right? Accept personal responsibility. And then the outworking of, we've got this significant issue. The issue is that Murray-Darling is, we're seeing flows out to the sea. We're seeing blue-green algae. By the looks of it, it's actually caused by the tidal. It's a tidal issue, and it shouldn't be, but it is because of this environmental flow. And then it's not actually addressing the real problems. The real problems is that the farmer can't afford his water. He needs his water, all right, in order for us to drink our own milk, eat our own cows and all that, and graze from our own cotton, whatever it is, whatever we're growing from it. And so each time these things, these outcomes, they pull the rug out, all right? They pull the rug out. And when they pull the rug out, it's one less farmer that can provide milk for a population that could become hungry, all right? One less farmer. Now, you look at Venezuela, and Venezuela, I'll put it to you, Venezuela to me is an entirely orchestrated situation, all right? You had, I think it was Chavez, and the, you've got the new bloke there now, whatever, right? You had one who was a socialist. He never insisted they could feed themselves. He never forced it on the country that get those fields working, sort up the infrastructure, and let's feed ourselves. Let's have a secure base, all right? He didn't do that. So do you think that was unintentional? Absolutely not. That was the purpose of it. The purpose was to pull the rug out so that the only place you could go, cap in hand, right, was for your food, was through the outlets. And of course, if you're unemployed or whatever, the only access to that is through the pension, right? So they've got you by the throat. That's not unintentional. That's deliberate, deliberate, deliberate. All right, so you look at our industry being wound down, especially you look at security, water, power. They're fundamental, in my view. Gas, they're fundamental. If you know, if you don't have water, you can't grow the crops, you don't have food. Power, you can't run your industry. Every time that you're trying to run your industry, you get a power surge and it's, you know, your lunch, a few things. You can't work like that. It's the purpose. The purpose is to get us to a point of we are so emasculated that we can't feed ourselves anymore. We can't rely on our industry, our infrastructure. And yet, I tell you, when Australia was first settled, they had every person back shoulder to shoulder and working, and there was no ones with highfalutin anything about that. They were doing it, and they, you know, their lives depended on it. They knew it, but I don't believe we've got this vividly in our mind as a nation. We don't currently have that vitality, and that's, to me, is the purpose, if you like, of this, is to regenerate that vitality. Because don't tell me it's not in your blood. Don't tell me it's not in every cell in your body. It is, because the desire to be free is inherent within every person to find expression and be creative.
Yes, well, I'm coming at it a different angle, because I'm a mother with a large family, and none of us had a photographic memory. That's the message I've got. None of us had a photographic memory. So I'm telling you, we talk about education, we've got to get the message across. How can we get the message across when probably more than 50% of the population cannot read? How can they read any of those books anyway? And with my own children, I can't get them because they are not interested in reading, and majority can't read, even though they've been well educated and it cost us a fortune. And while looking around at this audience here, they're all about my age and not much younger. I would say I'm 86, and I would say anyone over 70 would not have been taught to read correctly, to read all the articles that I read and my age group read. So the first thing is we've got to sort of educate these people into a very simple language that they can understand, and I think we'll have to get back to slogans. Otherwise, how are we going to get this message across? That's all I've got to say.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you, Colleen. And it is a formidable task. There's no question about it. How do you actually turn the ship of state around when it looks like it's heading towards the rocks? And to me, that's the question that's before us all. And I don't think I'm wrong in that assessment. I think I'm actually vividly right in it. And it's not my words. My level of education is quite poor. I didn't finish high school. A few years even less than that. But the thing is that in the reading that I've done, it actually is empowering. It's empowering knowledge of people who do have that deep thinking. Are you ever going to get a majority? No. Don't think about majorities. Think about what you can do. It always comes back to what you can do and what you choose to do. Because I put it to you that one busy bee, one dynamic particular individual, doesn't matter what facet, whether it's in a church, in a lift, on a stairs, stopping to have a chat at a football match, whatever. Without harping, you can show a truth. Without harping on something, you can show a truth. And what you might do is you actually cause ferment, or you cause the rising of the whole lump. We talked about a couple of analogies. One is yeast, if you like, and the other is salt. I don't see anyone who's going to put a lot of salt on something to flavour it and bring the best out. But the thing is, without salt, you certainly know it's not there. And the vitality of that whole lump is based on what the salt do. And that, to me, is what each individual person is. It's that person that has that spirit inside of them that says, yes, I'm going to be that particulate of salt and do what I can. Because the other option isn't very attractive at all.
Arnie, Stephen, you came and spoke in your Yamurka on the issue of policy, and I was there, and I was very impressed because it re-impressed upon me the importance of policy, goal, objective, as opposed to getting it confused with the administration thereof.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you can just make a couple of comments, because sometimes it's very easy to get the two confused, or people don't know much about the difference between the distinction between policy and administration.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah. No worries. Thanks for that, Stephen. Yeah, I had actually brought that up in a previous question, but I guess I can, if you like, re-embellish it or reinforce it. And that is, if you're going to approach your politician as a for instance, or you're going to approach your councillor, CEO, or whatever, really in the bureaucracy, to me it's the same thing in the sense that you've got to define the end position that you want and always use the consideration of purpose. What is the purpose of what you're trying to do? What is the purpose? Don't try and get into technicalities of it. If you're going to, I want BMW to build my next superbike. I think they do a fantastic job. I'm not going to get into designing superbikes. The purpose is I want their superbike. All right? The purpose, in a sense, is that standard of outcome that is something to be pleased with and proud of, and you can achieve your purpose. Right? The standard of outcome with Murray Darling is the purpose is that the outcome is that water's there, it's on tap, it's reliable, it's drought-proofed. Okay, and it's at a fair price where the system can actually find equilibrium, pay the bills, and you can produce your crops. And it's comparable with the rest of the world. You know, we used to, because of our coal supplies, our coal resources, we would have some of the stablest, reliable and affordable electricity in the world. And we've gone through the roof. It's crazy what's going on, and of course the ramifications towards our industry, but also towards our homes. You know, I read an interesting item the other day. It was about Britain, and Britain, through energy poverty, had lost thousands and thousands of lives through energy poverty. All right, and that's, you think about I think it's called collieries, which are the coal mines. They've been shut down, progressively shut down, because they're not profitable. The fact is, the cost of electricity has got to the point, this whole cost of running industry has got to the point where it's unviable. So you've really got to think about the influence that finance has over these things. It's not in equilibrium. It's not at that point. So it really, 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 really is important that we place these things into context. The purpose behind, what is it that you want to achieve? I don't want to design something and it's turned out square peg in a round hole. I want to achieve affordable, sustainable, reliable water.
And we are told to search for the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Seek and you shall find. And then we get back to, well, what is the truth? And I think Douglas said that truth is what works.
That's right.
What works with nature,
yes,
with the universe. Yes. Could you extend on that?
Okay, yes. It's an interesting comment. Hope I can do it justice. If you have, Douglas was a sailor, and it's interesting, he talked about you got something just right. Now, if you've ever been in a boat, a sailboat, and you get it just at the right angle, it's approaching the wind at the correct angle, the sail is full, you've trimmed it up so there's not waste and you're there, and you're in the groove. And that, what you're doing is you're actually aligning yourself with the, if you like the Stan Wolford's words, the natural laws of the universe. You're placing yourself looking at the natural laws of the universe. Now I'm going to touch on a diagrammatic illustration here, because I try to understand it in a sense, but I think it's actually something that's I've only just noticed recently, so I continue to be educated. I used to train as with the Metropolitan Fire Service, and they used to have a triangle, the fire triangle. Remember that? Fuel, oxygen, heat. Do you remember the fire triangle? Okay, but there's actually another facet to the fire triangle, and it changes the shape of that fuel triangle. It's called a rapid chemical reaction. A rapid chemical reaction. If those things are in unity, if they're in correct proportions, then they actually bring a fourth dimension into it. All right? Now, why do I say that? It's called a tetrahedron, by the way. A triangle base, like a pyramid, but coming up on three sides. Why do I say that? Because you've got individual freedom desired here. But we work in community. We need government. We need it. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, but unto God the things that are God's. We actually had a little bit of help in that when it was also said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your strength. There's nothing left. If you're loving God, you've got to be over here. If you've got a correct relationship, the individual has got to have so little restriction placed on their life. So you need freedom, God. You need government. And so what we do is we place the third leg of this stool is limited constitutional government. We place that third leg in it. When we get incorrect proportions, we have an increment. And that increment, of course, is increased freedom and security. Freedom and security. Freedom, government, security. You've got it all. And that's the fourth dimension, taking into account that trinity. Limited constitutional government. Right now, our limited constitutional government is moving over here towards tyranny, towards totalitarianism, and it's out of proportion. And so the tetrahedron is, you know what I mean? The whole shape is out of whack. I'm just trying to visualize something for you. But to me, it's quite important that in equilibrium, when all parts are taken into account, you have this beautiful balance. Just right. You've got it just right. And that's natural law. You call it natural law, if you like, where you hold things, and you're always looking at it. You're always looking at what is the purpose of education? What is it? It's to cause you to think. It's to cause you to look at the world and to marvel at creation and enjoy it. Isn't that what's education about? And then what is the purpose of government? Well, it's law, security, for sure. But surely in society, government is about upholding the law, not making so many laws that there's nothing left. They're about upholding the laws. Now, this argument had, I normally touch on this and I will again, 1100 was the coronation charter, 1215 was the Magna Carta, 1295 was written into the common law. It was a 200-year argument of this coming back to placing their ancient freedoms into the common law. That was a 200-year argument. Don't think this thing is short-lived and a one-off tick in a box that's done. Nothing like it. This is an ongoing battle. But in the correct relationship, the yeast will rise.
I haven't got a question, Arnie, but I'd like to just let you know the Murray-Darling Basin reconfiguration plan up in my end of the world is an absolute disaster for the local people. The bureaucrats might be getting their way, but it's destroying people's lives. Now, there's a move afoot by some of the leaders to take out, get involved in a class action against the Murray-Darling Basin Commission or the government, something like that. But they're not going to get anywhere if you think about it. The government have spent, it was to be $2 billion, and I think they've blown their budget. There's a tremendous lot of people have got a vested interest in this, in the fact that the suppliers of goods, the bureaucrats that's doing the work, there's a tremendous lot of benefit for some people, but not the continuing farmer. I had a look at this business for a class action that they put on the website. I'd like to talk to Robert about this. One of the funders for the class, or the people funding the class action, are having a look at it. They're going to help support it. And I was quite stunned to find they're in Malaysia. And you've got foreign people looking at getting involved in this class action. Now, the farmers, it's just gone too far. It's like a great juggernaut. It's gone too far to turn it back. So I don't know what you do, but they certainly need to reevaluate where they're going, and they certainly need to sit down and see if what they're doing, if it's a bit like Douglas said about try it on the dog. Okay. If you're taking on something too big, you're going to lose. You've got to be damn careful and do your homework. But I'd just like to pass you on this. These are things you're going to see. Our papers are just full of letters complaining about how they've been treated by the bureaucratic management of the Murray-Darling Basin Plan. My channels, my domestic water supply channels have been filled in, the water's cut off. We've had no garden water for a couple of months, and it's only just come on last week, and it's a bit iffy. But you need to know there's a lot of vested interest, a lot of money, and it's not all hunky-dory, I can tell you.
Just to recap on the outcome of the Murray-Darling Basin Plan, I'm of the view that, as I said before, it's achieving its purpose. It was designed to achieve just that, to disenfranchise, to take people away, and to reduce our security, and to put us in a position similar to Venezuela, because the fact is we can resist most things as long as we've got food in our belly, food and water. We can resist most things, but a hungry people can't resist anything. It's cap in hand, and you've got to really, really consider that in this overall intention or purpose behind this policy.